Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke out here in Atlanta. Jack, what's good?
My brother, what's good?
Got a very special guest today, man.
Hey, be careful how you throw "very special" out there.
Legendary. You say legendary.
Be careful with that
word. Award-winning.
Emmy award-winning. Yes. One of the most respected voices in our space.
One of the blueprints.
Yes. Someone we look up to and admire. Ernie Johnson, man, thank you for making some time today. We know we're in the midst of the playoffs.
Man, it's my pleasure, man.
So we appreciate it.
When I got the email, I was like, yeah, I definitely making the time for that.
Absolutely, man. Well, thank you. Let's jump right into it, man. We are in Atlanta. The Atlanta Hawks have exceeded all expectations. What has the energy been like around here, and what has it been like covering this young, exciting team?
It's a story, man. This weekend, there's no telling what's going to be going on, what this town's going to be like on Sunday.
Man.
And Saturday, leading up to Sunday, right, in Game 3, and then Tuesday with Game 4. So, man, the fact that they won that first one in Milwaukee and have done it every series so far, go on the road, and you guys know, I mean, it's not easy to do.
No,
start a playoff series on the road and, you know, beat somebody on their floor.
What a young team.
Yeah. And you look at all these guys who it's their first taste of it. Maybe they don't know any better.
Right.
Maybe they don't know they're not supposed to do
it. But that's what we're trying to figure out. Like, what has it been of late? Because it's not only Atlanta's young core, but it's Phoenix's young core. And there's other young cores that, you know, normally the narrative of, you know, young players in the playoffs, like, there hasn't been any of that this year. What can you contribute that to? Maybe big games leading up to their NBA career, or just?
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough to figure because, I mean, just look at Atlanta. So, you're the 5 seed. You got to open up in New York, and everybody's talking about, oh, look what Tibbs has here. Look at Julius Randle. Look at this. It's going to be very, you know, it's going to be a tough series. And then they take care of that in 5. And then you say, okay, this will be different now with Philly, because Philly has been close to getting to where they want to be. And there's all this, you know, just happy to be here. This is what the Hawks should be. Now it's house money. Now it's, you know, it's a swing, you know, it's a free swing. And that's, I guess some of that is Nate's influence, Nate McMillan's influence.
Gotta be.
And that's what you have to rely on because, you know, you look at who's been there. Okay, Lou's been in a lot of playoff games. Mm-hmm. Capella's been in playoff games. Tony Snell's been in playoff games. But there's, you know, there's not one of these voices, you know, of a guy who's been way deep in the playoffs and knows exactly what it takes to get to this level that they can, tune into. So I think Nate's influence has been great. And, you know, I'm reading what he says after these games, and it's like, look, everybody in the NBA has got talent. Every team's got talent. He said, but when you got a team that cares for each other and plays for each other and plays the right way, there's no telling where you can go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, they've been showing me something. But, you know, look, I'm talking to two players here. You guys know a player's mindset a lot better than I do. But when you're in there for the first time and it doesn't look like it.
Right.
Where does that come from?
Right.
And it's not like, not only have we not been here, it's like we're going to relish being here.
Right.
And we're not going to be satisfied with just making it,
right,
you know. So. Oh, it's been a fun story to watch, man.
And Nate was tough-minded, so if you know anything about Nate McMillan, how he played the game, you know this team is playing just like him as a player, because he was one of a great defender, real tough-minded guy, and I think that's kind of transferring over to those young guys.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, too? When you look at the Hawks, and they do all this on the road, and most of Trey's big games have come
on the road.
On the road. Mm-hmm. This is a team that last year, when they didn't, you know, they didn't even go to the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
They won 6 games on the road last year.
Yeah. Wow.
They've won 6 games
in
the playoffs,
right,
on the road. I mean, you talk about
crazy.
A transformation, man. That's
when other teams can't buy a game on the road.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
What are your thoughts about the Hawks and the young core leading by Trae Young and John Collins? Like, we definitely surprised with everything they're doing, but these two young guys are really leading this team and making a name for themselves.
Yeah.
What do you think about those two guys?
I think for the majority of the basketball public, you know, the diehards all know Trae, John Collins, okay?
Right.
The fringe guys, you know, the people who watch.
Casuals.
The casuals. who may just tune in, oh, it's playoff time.
Right.
And Kenny, like the other night, part of our show, and I will get around to answering your question, it's just that I'm really long-winded. Yeah. Part of our show is like we realize that there are going to be eyeballs on the set that maybe haven't been there.
Right.
So our producer, Jeremy Levin, the other day says, we're going to have a little meet the Bucks and meet the Hawks starting five kind of a thing. He said, we're just a little bio page on each guy. So we cranked this thing out. We did the Bucks first. And Kenny is just killing us. Why are we doing this? You think we don't know who the Greek Freak is? You think we don't know who Chris Middleton is? I said, we're not doing this show for you.
Right.
We're doing this show for the fans who are watching and may not know. And so then when you get to the Kevin Herters of the world, and Shaq says, I'm never going to call another man Red Velvet. You know, and it's like he'd rather call him Opie. And so, I think at that point, you know, we're introducing some players to
the world,
the public, and there's a guy like John Collins, who is, man, he's got this greyhound kind of a body, man. I mean, he's built
strong,
jump out of the gym. He even told us the other day, you know, when we had him on the game on the post game show, and he said something about, you know, I have some freakish, you know, athleticism too.
Yeah, he said that. Yeah,
and he does. But you're looking at guys like this who, you're not just talking about it; they're being about it. So you need a double double, and you need a corner three late in the game on the other guy's floor.
Yeah.
I mean, John Collins was huge. So yeah, they've got this good young mix, and while everybody's heard of Trey. It's the Kevin Herters, it's the John Collins, it's the Bogdan Bogdanovic, those guys who are getting it done. And everybody, you know, you kind of sleep on Clint Capella, but he has 19 rebounds and he has two offensive boards in the fourth quarter.
Then put back at the end.
Yeah, exactly. No,
Gallo coming and playing his old game.
You're right. You're right, Matt. I mean, they got these pieces, and it's not knock your socks off kind of personnel when you look at it and say, well, let's look at this, you know, Brooklyn has boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And Atlanta has, but when you're playing together and you're playing for each other and you're playing the right way.
Ain't no telling.
Good things happen.
Born in Milwaukee, you've been in Atlanta since a youngster. So what is this kind of matchup kind of meant to you personally, being someone from Milwaukee and then obviously residing in Atlanta?
Yeah, you know, it's, that is what it is. You know,
Not a big deal.
I had no control over any of those things. You know, I had no control over where I was born. I had no control over where we moved. You know, I was born in Milwaukee. My dad was a ball player, a baseball player.
Yeah.
And so he played for the Milwaukee Braves. And then when the Braves moved to Atlanta, it's like,
here we go.
When I'm 8 or 9, I'm not saying, no, Dad, I'm not going. You know, I'm going down there. But it's an interesting kind of a deal. And I'll always have this place in my heart for Milwaukee. When we were there for the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
People were so nice. We went back to my old neighborhood. We had a cookout in the front yard of my old house.
Really?
Yeah.
With the people who lived there?
The people who have moved into the house I used to live in have always been so accommodating. Like, I'd go up there for the PGA Championship, you know, when we were calling that. And I'd swing by the house. Oh, come on in, go, you know, look at your old room.
Yeah,
and
I love it.
And those things, those are crazy. But yeah, that night, and it was a beautiful spring night, and everybody comes out of their house. Everybody's milling around. Shaq comes by. Chuck's there. It was awesome. And so, it's a kind of a unique thing. Certainly, something we haven't seen in a while in the league, having Atlanta and Milwaukee matched up. But happy for the city of Atlanta too. Again, having lived here as long as I have, and seeing a lot of different regimes, and knowing that, you know, like when Mike Fratello had this team, and you remember those, those teams with Doc, and Neek and Randy Whitman, Antoine Carr, John Battle, and that was a hot ticket. And it's good to see a hot ticket back for Atlanta Hawks basketball, that's
absolutely. For sure. Aside from the Hawks, what players and teams have you been impressed with in the playoffs this year?
I guess you got to start Phoenix, don't you? I mean, Devin Booker. Again, to watch Devin Booker and watch Trae Young act like they've, you know, and I always make a note before a series starts and I look at, you know, how many playoff games you've been in, you know, and these playoffs start and you got a zero next to Book's name, and you got a zero next to Trey's name. Booker's been tremendous. Again, that's another one of those teams. You know, Monty Williams has done such a great job.
Yeah.
And they are fun to watch. Chris Paul is amazing. You know, just his, again, and you guys could speak to this. I hate to preface every answer with you guys could speak to this better than I can, but it's true. But just the intangibles that he brings, just the confidence that he instills, the leading by example, you know, of here's how the game's played, watch me. You know, I'm not going to preach to you how to do it,
right?
But watch. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's a team that plays both ends of the floor. Mikal Bridges, one of the best defensive players out there. Ayton's playing out of his mind.
Ayton's coming to his own. I think he took that AD matchup in the first round personally. He's been riding
ever since
then.
Yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm. And from that first game.
Yeah.
I think that first game of his playoff career was huge.
Set the tone.
If he'd gone out there and AD had just eaten his lunch, it might have been, maybe I'm not ready for this.
Yeah. And probably not even here at this point if that's what happened.
Yeah, you know instead, what I mean? After that game, everybody's talking about, well, look who outplayed Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. This kid, DeAndre Ayton. So, yeah, I think they've been impressive. I think, you know, shoot, Paul George has had a great postseason.
Yes.
Trying to, especially when you lose Kawhi.
Yeah.
And
he stepped up.
Yeah.
I think he takes a lot of unfair heat, unfortunately. He's like someone that people just love to hate on for some reason. You might have got to think everyone was loving him and felt bad for him when he hurt himself, and then he kind of got himself back to old PG, and then he's just, for some reason, the guy that people love to attack. And I love that he's been able to, first and foremost, address the mental and psychological toll it took on him in the bubble last year and coming at it. But we had him on the show before the season started. He just said, you know, I'm locked in this year and I'm back to myself. And I've been able to love to see that. Obviously, there's some ups and downs, but for overall, he's been playing great.
And I think part of that whole thing, too, is, you know, you get this Twitter beef and stuff like that. And
yeah.
You know, something happens and somebody fires at you and then you return fire. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hold it, how did this become the story over this? And
right.
So that whole narrative is playing out. But yeah, he's been great. And you know, on the Milwaukee side, you know, it's like, here's your opportunity. You know, 2 years ago you had a chance to go to the finals.
Yep.
And you didn't get it done. And now, you know, obviously everybody knows a freak, but I think Drew Holiday's been great. And it'll tell. PJ having that series where he's just bird dogging Kevin Durant.
Old school defense.
And talking to his mom.
Yeah.
You know? And that was one of the cool things to me.
Right.
Game seven.
Yeah. I mean, they're brothers.
It's like a 1-point game. It's game seven, third quarter. And here he is talking to Wanda, you know, and love you
right.
too. You know,
right.
So, no, there as in every playoffs, every year, there are great stories, there are great moments that you're glad to be a part of. And then to watch, you know, I can't wait to see what happens in this Atlanta-Milwaukee game as we speak here on this Atlanta-Milwaukee game on game two. Because part of you thinks, let's see if the Hawks are satisfied with getting that first one and now let's get back to our place. Or, again, if that just doesn't even enter the equation.
Well, like you said, they're young, and sometimes those young teams don't know no better.
Yeah.
Like, we're supposed to, who the fuck if we're in Milwaukee? We're coming to win, period.
Yeah, exactly right. You know? You know what's funny too about the Bucks? This year, I'm trying to make sure my numbers are right but they had 33 games this year where they shot 50%. Haven't had one in the postseason.
Wow.
They have not shot 50% yet. And
really?
Yeah. Not in a game.
That's
crazy. And they're three ball. I mean, they're shooting 30% from three.
Horrible.
And they're, you know, they were, that's where they live. Mm-hmm. So that's just a nugget to throw out there. See if I were on the show right now, Charles, I don't care about that. You know? Your numbers.
Come on, Ernie.
Yeah. that was very close.
Shout out to the OG Chuck, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, most of the big market teams, all of the big market teams are at home right now. You know, Lakers, Heat, Knicks, Celtics, Golden State, 76ers. I've been impressed still. It really feels like still the energy and the numbers are saying that this is still the most watched playoff since 2002. It really feels like the league is not necessarily passing the torch yet, but the league is in great hands with this young talent that is on the rise.
Sure. People get carried away with numbers and ratings and that kind of thing. I'm like the worst person in the world to talk to about that because I don't care if one person's watching or 8 billion are watching our show. You're going to do it the same. You're going to do it the same way.
Right.
And I'm just rooting for compelling series. That's all you can possibly want is that people during the day when they're at work and they're saying, man, I can't get home. I can't wait to get home and watch that game tonight. You know, you're not going to get that if a series is standing 3-0. You know, it's just like, I'll get there. But when series are like this, I don't care which city is represented. We just want
good games.
I just want compelling games. I want you to look back. You know, like people are at the water cooler today, if water coolers still exist. I don't even know. You know, they're saying, man, did you stay up and watch that Clipper game? Yeah, I did. Yep. And so that's what we're hoping for, man. That's what we want. Nobody's rooting for teams. People want to say that, oh, man, you guys are all, you are so. You know, no, we're not. We just want the games to be good, man. Let's have triple overtime. Let's have, you know, let's have dramatic. Let's have Ayton dunking at the, you know, with 7/10 of a second
left. Running off the backboard in the playoffs.
KD with his big-ass feet on the line that could have sent Milwaukee home, but instead.
Aren't those moments are just like, wow. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, this is a great time of year for us, man.
What was it like moving to Atlanta age 9?
I had no idea what Atlanta was. Where Atlanta was, what, you know, you're 9 years old, eight, nine. I think I was probably 8 going on 9. You know, and you're in Milwaukee, you know, just doing whatever 8-year olds do in Milwaukee, and all of a sudden it's okay going to Atlanta. I didn't know if that was like next to Brazil or near Antarctica. I had no idea where Atlanta was. You know, because of the reason for the move had you excited, because okay, your dad works for the Braves. My dad was a broadcaster at that point, you know, so it was just like, man, I can't wait to, you know, go to a new ballpark and, you know, watch ball games and that kind of thing. And I realized I had this, like, this dream childhood growing up, the son of a ball player, you know, and a broadcaster. Because you go, you know, I'm going to the stadium with him. You know, he's going there 6 hours before first pitch, you know, and
CBP
doing his stuff.
And everything.
Yeah, I'm sitting there with my forearm on the batting cage watching Hank Aaron take swings. And I'm
legendary.
Like, shoot, man. Yeah, I mean, I had it. It was great. So, moving down here was awesome. We had to get used to, some accents and that kind of thing. Here's a true story. My mom, they had been doing some road work, so my mom drives over some new paved road, and all this stuff splashes up on the side of the car.
Tar.
And so she says, we pull into this gas station when they used to have full serve, you know, and the guy comes out and said, my mom says, I need you to get the tar off my car. And he says, which tar is it? She said, no, the tar that splashes it. He says, no, is it the left front tar or is it the right rear tar?
Tire.
Like, oh, okay.
Right.
Welcome South.
Right.
Okay.
Welcome
okay.
To the South.
No. Yeah. So that was our first. That was our first lesson in the Southern drawl.
Mm, that's funny. So growing up as you know, having your dad in the major leagues and then transitioning into broadcast, what was that like as a young kid in school and around your friends?
You know, it's. It's an interesting point because it was, you got a lot of that. Well, he just made the All-Star team because his dad's the Braves announcer.
Right.
You know, there was some of that built-in stuff like that, and or he's just doing this because his dad, blah, blah, blah. You get used to some of that stuff. You realize, obviously, that unless you prove it on your own, career's not gonna last.
Right.
It's even, you know, it's like you get your first TV job in Macon, Georgia. You know, and so that's not the biggest market in the world. But people, well, he only got the Macon TV job because his dad's a Braves broadcaster.
Yeah.
Look, people at those stations
don't care.
If you get on the air and you're horrible,
they're
not going to say, well, we've got to keep him. You know, his dad, you know, it's like you got to keep on
that,
proving yourself to move up. And so, it was, again, you know, it was great. You know, I spent a lot of time just going to the ballpark and watching him work. You know, I watched my dad, how seriously he took his craft, you know, in his preparation and how he treated people. And again, it's not like he had to sit me down and lecture me about this is how you do this.
Right.
It was just, I watched him.
You see an example.
Yeah, and I tell dads all the time now, I said, look, you got to realize it. Kids have superpowers, man.
Mm-hmm.
They see and hear everything.
Everything.
And so they watch, they see how you're acting when you're caught in traffic. They see what happens when you've had a bad day at the office. They see it and they hear it, and you don't, you know, even though you may not consciously be thinking you're teaching them, mm-hmm. they're learning.
They're learning something, right, yeah. at all times.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of opened the door with this, but I kind of want to dig a little deeper. Memorable experiences as a child around the game of baseball. You know, you said you got to casually watch Hank Aaron take
That's
batting
crazy.
Practice.
Yeah.
Some other stories that they were just like, wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of it's like an eye-opener because, you know, you're sitting around in the Braves clubhouse, you know, a few hours before the game, you know, my dad may be doing an interview over here in the corner, doing something like that. And it's like, wow, that guy's sitting in his locker smoking a cigarette. Whoa.
Right. Dang. Old school.
Yeah, it was
Old
like,
school.
Really? But it was, I think it was just all the opportunities I had, even to meet guys my dad played against. Mm. Like Stan Musial, okay? One of the all-time greats. And you know, the Cardinals would be in town and we'd be on the field. My dad would say, hey, come over here, you got to meet this guy. And so I meet, you know, and again, this is not all when I'm a little 9 or 10 year old. I'm in high school at this point. I'm, right. you know, and I know the game and I know these players. And like Stan Musial comes up, and we shake hands and he says, man, I remember facing your dad. Mm. You know, he used to throw, my dad threw a palm ball, which is, you know, they don't call it the palm ball anymore, but that was his changeup. You know, now you got circle change and you get all this stuff. But he said, your dad threw me this palm ball and his same motion as his fastball and the ball never got there. It just went and got, and I'm saying, listen, how cool is this that I got Stan Musial telling me stories about my dad, you know? And then on the basketball side, it was like when the Hawks moved down here, early 70s, you know where they played? Georgia Tech. The same Coliseum where they play. It was Alexander Memorial Coliseum there. But when the Hawks moved down here, they played their games at Georgia Tech.
I didn't know.
And
that.
So, yeah, my dad would, and what's strange now, my dad always used to park on the same piece of street right across from the arena, which is, and I drive past that every day when I go to work. I mean, I go down that same hill and I remember my dad stopping and then parallel parking and then we'd walk across, go in there. But that's where I saw Pete Maravich play. That's where I saw, the teams that came in. That's where I saw Wilt, saw Bill Russell, saw all these guys as I was growing up, you know, watching, you know, and that's where basketball bit me.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, Jerry West, you know, watching all of these guys. And what's cool is like, you know, at the Legends brunch and that kind of thing at All-Star Weekend where you run into some of these guys and you bring up to them, I used to watch you play at Georgia Tech against the Hawks. And they're saying, man, the lights in that place were so bad and that floor was so hard and that was, you know, and they remember it.
Right.
And then I even shouted out one day, I shouted out Jumpin' Joe Caldwell at that Legends brunch. And I said, man, I grew up watching guys like this. And Joe was there, and I didn't know who he was. And then it was like, man, you don't know what it meant to have somebody bring up my name again 40, 50 years after, you know? So,
cool.
That's where I got that first taste of the NBA, man. Just loved it.
That's some big names.
Absolutely.
Oh, Pistol was my guy. That was, you know, everybody was trying to grow their hair all floppy. Everybody wore the floppy socks. Everybody wanted to shoot from 30, you know? But
What was it like seeing him play, though, and just his game, obviously, before his time in his game, but what was it like just watching him play?
Yeah, my dad actually even took me up to Athens once when Pete was still at LSU. Because, see, my dad was a huge fan. My dad played some semi-pro basketball, so he loved hoop. But he, you know, he'd always like, LSU's playing Georgia tonight. We're going to go up and watch Pete, you know? And, I mean, he just, you know, you're not talking about a three-point line over there at that point. But he just had this great flair, you know, and it was like you didn't care really who won the game. You just wanted to see this guy that everybody was talking about. And as the legend goes, also, he once won a game with a hook shot, like, at Georgia. And the Georgia fans
started cheering,
picked him up. Yeah. I mean, that's what the legend says. I can't attest to that, but there, uh-huh. but the story is, yeah, he hit a game winner and the home fans, you know, picked him up and carried him off the floor. Mm. That sounds like a little bit. I don't know if it.
That's what you know, I need to see that.
Hey, but that's Pistol Pete. You never know if it could happen to anyone. It could happen to him.
Yeah, and Lou Hudson was there. Zelmo Beatty in those days. I mean, that was. Man, it was a great education in the game of NBA basketball.
What were the early years of your broadcasting career like, trying to find your footing and climbing the ladder?
It's like what it is for a lot of kids in, you know, journalism schools and that kind of thing, where, again, there's so many more outlets now than there were when I graduated in 78, you know, and it was like, okay, you want to do sports, or you got to go to ABC, CBS, or NBC. You know, ESPN was just getting going. You know, CNN in its infancy. Boy. And so, you know, I go down to Macon, Georgia, and I'm anchoring the news. And at that point, I'm like 23 years old, scared to death, you know, and not very good at it. But I'm on TV. It's what I want to do.
Right.
But my first three jobs were all news jobs. I was a general assignment reporter after being a news anchor in Macon, and they hired me here in Atlanta as a news reporter. So I was doing all that, you know, crime beat stuff and all the county commission meetings.
The original job, yeah.
Yeah, because while I did radio in Athens and I was doing news and sports, and I said, whoever was going to hire me first, I'm going.
Take it, right.
And it was, so it's a news job. And then, you know, it's in this business, things work out crazy sometimes. A new news director took over at WSB, and when I'd been there like 2 or 3 years, and one of our sports guys was on vacation, so I'm filling in doing a live shot before a baseball game. And I come into work the next day, and his assistant says, Raven wants to see you in his office. And I'm saying, all right, I guess I better put my stuff in a box and get out.
Right.
It's going to take this guy one day to let me go. And I walk in there and he says, you thought about doing sports?
Over with after that.
And I was like, yeah, I kind of thought I was pigeonholed into the news end now. But he said, no, I think I'd like to make you the weekend sports anchor and make a change here and change the whole trajectory of my career and of my life. You know,
what was that?
That was 1984, maybe, because I started at SB in 82. Yeah, so like 83, 84, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden, I was the weekend sports guy. And that's when, that led to like 6 years of that. And then the folks at Turner, and that's a good thing about having Turner in Atlanta, they saw me all the time. Mm-hmm. And so when they had an opening, they were like, they called me and said, you want to come over here and work with us? I said, I think that sounds good. And he said, we could pay you this. I could do
okay,
that.
Okay, then, fine. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a little more than I'm getting here at the local station.
Before we get to the TNT and that journey, tell us where Elevator Ernie was born at.
Elevator Ernie was born at the Omni.
The Omni.
And that's like mid-80s. That's 85 or 86, and this is when I'm anchoring the weekend sports at Channel 2. And Bill Needle was that's a name from the past. He was the Hawks PR director at that point. So he's setting up a media slam dunk contest. So there are a couple of writers from the AJC. Steve Bruner was in there, a couple other guys. Craig Sager, who was at TBS at the time. So Sager gets invited. Yeah. Sager shows up wearing these candy stripe red and white shorts that were just about exposing everything he had, okay? And I was like, how can you wear shorts that small?
Yeah.
And but Sags and I knew each other even back then because we'd be covering different stuff. So they said, yeah, okay, you guys show up here at the Hawks shoot around because this is when, and we're going to kind of show you what's happening because we're going to do this in a pregame at the Hawks tonight. They gave us a pair of Brooks, gave us Neek's shoes. So I had, I was wearing Dominique's Brooks on that thing, and I don't know what possessed me to wear those. I talk about Sager's shorts. I had
you
those.
Had some fruit smugglers on too. They
Dude,
said,
man,
huh?
Those things. I don't know what I was thinking, man. Isn't it amazing when you look back some years and say, what was I thinking when I wore that?
Kept the glasses on though.
Had the glasses. Had the socks up to here. Had the.
But that was a style back then, though.
Yeah, the huggers, man, it was, you know, yeah, the grape smugglers, as Kenny always calls them. So, yeah, so that's where it started, and they gave us the they gave us the T-shirts, and mine said Elevator Ernie. And I had no idea, not like I came out here and said, hey, make mine Elevator Ernie.
Elevator Ernie.
You know, you just showed up at that night, and they said, here's your T-shirt. Oh, Elevator Ernie, okay. And,
yeah, that's funny.
And so, yeah, we did like an 8-foot rim. It was some brutal entertainment. Mm. But I look back at some of those pictures, and I saw Craig Neal, who was one of the judges. Yvonne Joseph, member from Haiti, yep. was a center at Georgia Tech. He was one of the judges. And then somehow that video resurrected itself on our air, and now it won't go away. So now at any slow moment, anytime they want to hurt me, they bring
there
that thing
is.
Out.
Could you jump? Could you dunk in real life on a real goal?
Look at me. Come on, man. What do you think? I could touch a net.
There you go. Well, you never know. You could have been airborne in your younger days.
Man, I never could. I touched the rim, maybe, but I could never do that. I could never. And that's what I don't know what it was. And I think maybe if I had had what a lot of young players these days have, and that's there are training tools and that kind of thing, where somebody can actually tell you, here, hey, look, this is how you. If you want a vertical, this is what you're going to have to do, and you're going to have to work on this, and you're going to have to develop. Yeah. But for me, it was like, look, even though you look at my physique, I was not a big guy in a weight room. I know that's surprising. but it was like, I'm one of those guys who were like, when I was taking PE classes and they started doing pull-ups, I always found a way to kind of like get to the back of the line every time.
Yeah.
And then they say, oh, let's move over here. Good.
So we're talking about that, too, how, when we were younger, we just played outside. We played everything. We played outside. There was no training. There was no, you had games. You barely had practice. Like now, because I have 12-year-olds now, and it's really like almost, not a job, but almost like a job with their routines at a young age. And I kind of just missed the days of just going outside and playing until the lights came on.
That's the ball up.
No, you're exactly right. And that's the same. And the world's just different.
Right.
Because, we used to, I was more baseball player than I was a basketball player. I played a little college baseball at Georgia. Mm-hmm. But growing up, obviously, baseball was my first love. And so, all those summer mornings, all your buddies would get together. You'd all walk a mile and a half to the grammar school up there where they had a field, and you would just play.
All day.
You would play all day. You'd play pickup games all day. Mm-hmm. You come home stinking, just horrible, you're so just and so hungry to have dinner, but your parents never gave it a second thought. It was never like, where's Ernie?
Where are you going? What's
he's
going
over
on?
At Spalding playing playing ball, but it's different, and we didn't have video games and any of that stuff, man. It was like, just go and play.
Now I can't get my kids outside. Like, outside, Dad, what are you talking
every
about?
Every gadget in the world.
Yeah, but you gotta bribe them. I'll get you a video game to go outside
just
and play.
Just go outside and play.
Yeah.
How did you land at Turner Sports?
They called one day. I'd been there. I'd been at SB, Channel 2 here in Atlanta for like 6 or 7 years. And they were actually looking to make me the host of you guys remember Wide World of Sports.
Yeah.
TBS had its own version of that called U.S. Olympic Gold. And they were using that show as like a year-long vehicle to lead up to the Goodwill Games, Ted Turner's, Olympics, the Goodwill Games. And they said, we want you to come be the host of U.S. Olympic Gold and then be the host of the Goodwill Games. And I said, okay, that'd be cool. I can do that. And then there was a shakeup in the hierarchy of the Goodwill Games, and they said, oh, no, Ernie Johnson's not going to be the host of the Goodwill Games. Larry King's going to be the host of the Goodwill Games.
Wow.
And Hannah Storm's going to be one of the co-hosts, and Nick Charles. I was left doing a variety of sports, judo, modern pentathlon,
judo,
rowing. It was back at the time.
The less sexy sports.
Yeah, it was back at the time when the Bo Jackson campaign was out there with Bo Knows.
Bo Knows, yeah.
And so I told folks I was doing all the sports Bo doesn't know. but that's the way it worked out. And really, we hardly talked about the NBA when I signed the contract. Mm. But TNT was just coming into being. And so after the Goodwill Games there, and I did some reporting for the NBA that first year back in 1990 or 1989-90, then the Sager was the studio host at that time, and they wanted to move Segs on the road as a reporter, And they moved me into that chair for the 90-91 season, and I've been sitting there ever since.
Oh, man.
That's what Inside the NBA initially started.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, it was the pregame show, and then it was, yeah. And the postgame show was different there. Then sometimes it was all dictated by the clock. You know, it's like Inside the NBA is next, but the game went till 5 till 11, so it would be like
6 minutes.
Hey, how you doing? You know, how about that game? We'll see you next week. But then it really just kind of morphed into what it is now.
Please paint a picture for me, what the NBA was like in the 90s. Take us back.
Oh, what the NBA was like in the 90s. Oh, when I first got started there, I mean, we're still talking the names. I mean,
big
the
names.
The Birds and the Chucks and the Magics and the Michaels. I mean, no, I mean, it's hard to beat. It was hard to beat the star power you had back then. And I, you know, I still remember going to the workouts for the Dream Team back in the early, you know, out in La Jolla.
91,
you got a chance to experience that.
Yeah, I was out there a little bit. I didn't go to the Olympics, but I was there. It was like the same time as the draft, too. So you go out there and Marv Albert said something really interesting the other day, because he was thinking back on that Dream Team, and he just remembered the first time he saw that collection of talent walk out on the floor at the same time. It was like, you might want to catalog this, because you may never see something like this again.
Right.
But those were, you know, I mean, to me, every era of the NBA has those stars, those personalities, those talents that you wonder, are we ever going to see this again? Because I can remember watching Michael and Neek have some unbelievable, you know, battles.
Yeah.
You know, and both of them coming up with stuff. You said, "Man, I'll never see somebody do that in midair again."
Human highlight film.
And then here comes Kobe. Here comes so many guys who were, you know, the things that dropped your jaw.
Vince.
Back then, Vince. Yeah, you're saying.
It's normal now.
Wow, we're seeing that. Yeah, and you're seeing it on a nightly basis. You're seeing it in February games. You're seeing a guy come up and do something. And how did that go in? And there was a time you thought, I'll never see anybody do that. And now you see it a lot. And just the athleticism in the league has I don't know where it goes from here,
guys.
I mean, I don't. You see so many things on a nightly basis that really defy description, but you kind of get used to seeing them now.
We're spoiled.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's, I mean, to me, the dunk contest is so hard, because what can you really do from here? I mean, with Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon and Vince and all these dunks, like, you've got to almost kill yourself to do something amazing. And then, like you said, too, now we're seeing some of these challenge competition dunks in games.
Yeah.
Like, they're getting it off in games. You're like, what the hell? Like, what is Vince Carter out here doing?
Yeah, no, that's, and that, I think, you know, the Vince in Oakland in 2000, that was my favorite. Because it's the first time I ever heard an arena at All-Star Weekend sound like a playoff game. I mean, when Vince did his thing and did it all on the first try.
Right.
And
made,
did it
made
so,
all of them.
So effortlessly, the building erupted. It was like somebody had hit a game winner. And,
you know.
And from that height, you know, then now you've had, you mentioned Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine. I mean, they came up with some great stuff. But what can you do anymore that nobody has ever seen? It's all just kind of a little variation, a little spin-off of that, you know. And if you say, wait, that was pretty original, I say, no, really, that looked that like back. What he did in 2015.
Right.
But that's what makes it hard. And I think, you know, my favorite part of it has always been the three-point, because it's the point, it's the part of the contest I can relate to.
Right.
Because I can go out in the gym and shoot.
Yeah.
You know, I can go out in the driveway and shoot, but to your point, Jack, I'll never be able to say I got out in the driveway and dunked.
Man.
So even there's a great appreciation for what they're able to do,
right?
But there's nothing that says, you know, I think I might like to go try that.
A lot of people think that.
Yeah, but when you're out there shooting, then you're saying, wow, how did Craig Hodges hit that many in a row?
Right.
Or how does he hit this? And these days, you know, how does Dame feel comfortable, you know, taking two steps over half court and hitting and shooting a jumper, not a heave, shooting a jumper? You know, and all these guys with their crazy range, man.
It's unbelievable.
We're gonna have to make the court bigger.
Something.
That's the next move. How did inside NBA change once Ken and Chuck joined the crew?
It got worse. No. You know what? To me, I worked with Kenny first.
Yeah.
And you guys know there's just, you either have that or you don't have
that. You don't.
You know, if somebody has to talk you into being on TV, if somebody has to say, oh, I really wish you would do this, you know, and you really, you know, that's one thing. But when you got it, mm-hmm. you got it. Kenny had it, you know. Kenny was late in his career. He was working his way through 10 days, you know. Like, he'd be on the show one time and say, hey, yeah, I was with Detroit, now I'm with so-and-so, you know. So, mm-hmm. but man, he just has a gift.
Brought it.
He's just natural. And so I was having a great time working with him. And then when you get a chance to have Chuck on the show.
Oh, man.
You know, and it looked for all the world like he was going to NBC. NBC was right here with him. And he said, you know, he had verbally agreed with, you know, to go to NBC. And he comes down to Atlanta and goes out with the Turner folks one night.
Over with.
I don't know what that night was like, but it must have been good.
Over with.
Yeah. And so he signs with us. And your only hope is that the things that made him an attractive, you know, option to be on your air is that he'll maintain that he won't lose that. Because, mm-hmm. look, in the course of my years there, we've had guys on the air who you thought from watching them interviewed or that kind of thing, you said, well, this guy would be great on TV. Yeah. And then the red light goes on. And they'd rather be getting a root canal. Yeah, and if, you know, and they don't want to piss anybody off. I don't want to say this because this, you know, and
that's
I'm not
Chuck.
Yeah, no, Chuck doesn't care, and that's great, and that's the way Chuck's always been. Right. You know, anytime he was interviewed as a player, after his playing days, he's going to tell you what's on his mind, and if you don't agree, that's fine.
That's okay. Okay. Yep.
But what he's not going to do is back away from it and say, no, I can't say that.
Right.
And he's got that over me because sometimes there are times in a commercial break where I'll say something. He said, oh, you got to say that on the air. I said, I'm not gonna do that. He said, I'm stealing it. I said, go ahead. You take that. Because it was like the other day, you know, when Indiana fired Nate Bjorkgren as the head coach. And then in the commercial break, I looked at Chuck and I said, you know, they had Nate McMillan, and I said, they fired the wrong Nate. Mm. And he said, oh, you should have said that. And I said, nah, I don't need to. And he said, well, I'm using it. We came out of break, we do the Nate Bjorkman stories.
Right.
Fired the wrong Nate, you know. Right. So, but Chuck's got that, that's not in Chuck's DNA to hold back.
Mm-mm.
Chuck's, you know.
Wouldn't be him with that. I remember when he first started though, and I think that's when you guys kind of went into the full booth because he used to wear flip-flops and shorts and all and just have like the sports coat on, but then you could see underneath. But you could see underneath, well now at least they block it. But I remember at the beginning when he got on, because I mean that's right when I was in college and really started to tune into this stuff and it just kind of see his transformation. On that and kind of really find himself. What has that been like? Obviously, Shaq comes and joins the show in 2011. Now it's an Animal House and you have to control three of the biggest personalities in the game. What is that like kind of trying to be the quarterback or the kind of the caretaker of such a rambunctious
group? Shaq and Chuck alone.
Yeah.
Them two alone.
Yeah. Sometimes you try to control and sometimes...
Let it go.
It's just...
Good for TV sometimes.
Yeah. Well, no, and you have to know that,
guys.
You have to have the... And to our producer's credit, Tim Kiley, who was our producer for a long time, and now Jeremy Levin, have a good feel for that. And they know, I'm going to stay out of their ears during this. This thing is rolling. Let them go. And then, but there are times also when you say, look, okay, we're to the point where Chuck's repeating himself. We're at the point where Shaq's about to
fight him.
explode a blood vessel if he, you know, like, because they just can't disagree on something without, like, feeling like you have to talk louder than the other guy to be heard. Like the other day when they're talking about how you defend Trae Young and the drop coverage and that kind of thing, and Charles says, and Shaq is screaming over here on my right, and he's just, no, and then it's like, okay, I'm still going to stay out of this for a second, but and then every now and then, hey, let's just hear Charles, okay? And Charles, no, let's just hear Shaq. So that's more my role in the thing. Nobody cares what I think about, you know, how to defend Trae Young. They want to hear from the players.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to do is, hey, look, nobody's going to understand anything.
Anybody, right.
If you're yelling and he's screaming, and then he's going to come over and try to move furniture. So that's where you step in and try to just moderate and kind of say, hey, guys, this is a great discussion, but let's make it maybe a little more, you know, discernible rather than just you shouting at him. But they know the game, and they come out at it different ways,
they
man.
Know the game.
And so what you don't want to do is get in the way of really good analysis by saying, oh, no, now we got to go to commercial. Our producers are great at saying, we'll make the time up somewhere else. You guys were rolling on
them.
So that's good.
Who is it, the producers? Do you guys help just the creativity with the show, from Gone Fishing to Kenny running to the board to I Guarantee? Like, where does all the creativity, do you guys have any input, or is it kind of just play by ear, go with the flow?
Everybody's got input.
Love it.
Everybody, you know, the three of us might have input, but it's everybody on the crew. That's what makes it so much fun.
Looks like you guys are just having a blast every single night.
But it's everybody upstairs. I mean, it's the assistant graphics guy who thinks.
Underdog.
Yeah, it's Underdog. You're right. You're right. It's everybody. But it's lighting guys. It's audio guys. It's the men and women who work on that show come up with an idea. And, you know, like we'll have a production meeting 3-4 hours before. Chuck, Kenny, and Shaq are not at that, and they're not invited to it because we don't want them to know what we're thinking about doing. But you'd be amazed at how many times when they say, we're thinking about doing this for the Neato Stat of the Night tonight. You know, it's based on something that Kenny did back in 1995. And you wouldn't believe, and you know, we're doing these on Zoom, the number of voices that pop up and say, maybe you want to use this a clip from so-and-so. Mm. Maybe you want to do this. Maybe you want to do this. And what's great is our producers are like, bring it on.
The best ideas.
I'm the producer of the show. You know, they could say that, and in TV you run into this. I'm the producer.
Right.
This is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But these guys are like, I'm producing it, and I've got this great crew working with me who throw ideas in and throw this out. And that's why, like, when we've been very fortunate in terms of the show winning a lot of Emmys and stuff like that.
Congrats.
But every time that happens, everybody on that crew, no matter what you do, feels like,
they had a
we
hand
won
in
that.
It.
We had a hand in it.
I love it.
And that's what makes it so much fun to go to work, man. I pull into that parking lot, and I know before this work day's through, I'm going to laugh my ass off about something.
The whole time.
And you need that.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's there's too many people going to work because they got to go to work. But we get to.
You know you're good at what you do, too. It's a great feeling.
Wow.
And that's the thing, too. I mean, I'll miss games sometimes and still tune in, you know, just tune in to watch your guy at the show. I mean,
or just to see if there's an international incident created by something somebody says. Yeah.
To me, the most entertaining, and obviously you guys have been awarded, like Jack said, you know, congratulations on all the Emmys and accolades. But like I said, you kind of have set the blueprint to how shows can be ran. You know, like you said, there's old school ways of this is my way or the highway, or you kind of have the input and take the creativity of everyone and you get a great product with it. You know, we kind of feel like we do similar stuff here where it's just not one way. You know, we feel like this will be better. Jack, like, I want to do it this way. Or, you know, so, I mean, to me, that's where you get the best out of everyone, and everyone feels like they're a part of the success.
Yeah, and not every, you know, not every idea is going to be great, but what our guys are so good at doing is saying, yeah, I don't know if that's going to fly, but I see where you're going. We'll see. So nobody gets their feelings hurt and then clams up and next time says, well, I'm not going to suggest anything now because it got shot down. Because I get stuff shot down too. You know, I'll say, maybe we can do this. And then somebody will say, I don't know if that's going to, I don't really find that very funny, but we could do this. And I say, well, that's a better idea. I think you always have to do that. You always have to step away and say, what is going to be the best thing for the show? And I think that's why it's worked with us too, because Chuck, Kenny, Shaq have never made or tried to make the show about them.
Yeah.
They've never said, hey, I don't have enough airtime here. I'm not getting enough FaceTime. Everybody just says, what's going to make the show better?
Right.
And that's
team environment.
Look, started this thing talking about the Hawks.
Right.
That's what you're seeing with them.
They're buying in.
I'm not making this game about me, but if it's going to make our game better and our team better, let's do it.
So be it.
That's what it's about.
2003, yeah. You're diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Battle through, start doing treatment in 06. First of all, what was that experience like for you, but then also being vulnerable enough and open enough to share it with us and allow us in with your journey?
You know, it's how many people out there,
I lost my mom to cancer in 07.
I mean, you get into any room and ask people, and when I speak, I do that too. When I'm going to talk about this, just give me a show of hands if your life has been touched somehow by that. Mm-hmm. And it's a close friend, or it's a family member, or it's they themselves. And so, when I got that word, for 3 years, I really didn't have to do anything because you could look at me and not see and say nothing's wrong. So only a few people knew. But then, in 2006, my lymph nodes start swelling up, and it's like, okay, I'm going to have to tell everybody what's going on. And then the thing about cancer is the uncertainty is one thing that really gets to you.
Yeah.
Because something is going on. You don't know where this is going to take you.
I know you won't
But be, once yeah. a doctor tells you, all right, you've got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it's this kind of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and you learn a lot about, I thought there was just one. No, there's a bunch of different ones. And here's how we're going to treat it. Then you put your head down and go.
Yeah.
Then you just, and you lean on your faith, your family, your friends, and you get through it.
Right.
I did 6 cycles of chemo there and went into remission, came back on the air. And, I've been in remission from non-Hodgkin's since 2006.
Congratulations.
And then, and here's the thing. I mean, I had prostate cancer 2 years ago. So I was like, I wasn't done with it, but the thing that's different, guys, is that when my wife and I sat down with that doctor in 2003 and got the word that first time, and you can't believe the words you're hearing,
right?
And then you can't believe that you're in this infusion thing in 2006 and looking at all these folks who have cancer and you're all hooked up and you're all doing these drips. And then in 2019, when I got that word, and she and I were sitting across from a doctor, and it was like, we've been here,
mm-hmm.
we've done this, we're fixing to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, it was surgery. It wasn't any kind of chemo, but it was just like, okay, well, we're going to do whatever we have to do, and we will get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And without my faith, I don't, look, I had a pastor who told me, it's just like back then when you're kind of shaking your fist at God and saying, why me? Why is this happening? And he's like, hey, look, you trust God, period. And I'm not trying to turn this into church,
mm-hmm.
but that's the foundation of my life.
Right.
Not I'm going to trust God if this turns out the right. way I want it to, or when this happens. I'm just going to trust God, period. He's going to take me someplace through this. It's going to make me a better man.
Right.
He's going to open my eyes to something. And one thing that's opened my eyes to in terms of cancer is that when you get it, it brings with it an opportunity and a responsibility to help the next person through it. I can't tell you how many times people have called me and said, hey, I got a buddy who's starting chemo. Can you call him? Or can you drop him an email?
Never know what that means to him.
You don't. And it's all about hitting the send button or just getting on the phone.
Yep.
I had one of those this week. I just called this guy. He didn't know I was calling, but a friend of his had called and said, hey, he read your book and he did this. And it was like, hey, John, how you doing? Ernie Johnson.
Wow.
Wow, really? I said, how we feeling? We're good. I'm a little scared. It's like, let's talk about it. And then you wind up swapping stories for 20 minutes and saying, you're gonna get through this thing,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And so people did it for me. I'm trying to do it for people. It's like there's always gonna be folks in that club that nobody wants to be in.
Mm-hmm.
That membership, I wish that membership would dwindle down to the point where you wouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But it keeps on going. And so every time some new member gets in that club and you can call them and say, it's going to be okay.
Means a lot.
It's going to be difficult maybe at times, It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not to the magnitude of what you had to fight through, but I got a message this morning from Deion Sanders. And I'm going through my own transformation with, you know, I stopped drinking and smoking and everything. And a lot of people don't understand it because we have a show called All the Smoke. Yeah. But I got a message from him this morning, and it seemed like he always sent me the message at the right time.
Yeah.
And just to tell me that the direction I'm going in, everybody's not meant to, and keep leading and stay strong. And you need to hear stuff like that sometimes, especially from legends like Deion Sanders, because a lot of people on the outside might not understand where you come from and where you're going. But to hear people who've been at the top their whole life, multi-sports, and who he is as a Hall of Famer, one of the greats, to hear that from him, it gave me more inspiration to continue to fight and be who I am.
Jack, I was
so gonna, I understand that.
No, I was going to say to you, when you read that text or you get that phone message or you get that email, and it's like, we all need encouragement.
Yep.
You know, people can look out there and say, well, this guy's got it all. He must have this, you know, and this. And
still human.
Man, there is nothing like encouragement. Right. There is nothing like, and it's one of those things that, and it hits you right out of the blue when it's like, man, that just made my day.
I was instantly in tears, you know, so that meant a lot. That meant so I know what you're going through.
No, that's tremendous, man. I love hearing that.
How did the addition of Shaq happen? How did that even happen with the big fella coming on?
I think everybody, look, when a larger than life guy like that
literally
is done playing, everybody wants him.
And a kid at that, a big kid at that.
World's biggest child. But if he's going to be out there and he's going to want to do TV, you got to be crazy not to make a run at him.
Right.
You know, and so everybody makes a run at him. But I think, you know, there were some growing pains. I'll be honest, man. You know, it's like, number one, you're switching careers, okay? So nobody expects you to jump from that into this seamlessly. Like, okay. But he's, you know, what he looked at with our show is the fun we had.
Yeah.
You know, Shaq just happens to be an all-world basketball player. It wasn't because he studied every player in the game or is this great student of how to play. You know, that's like, he just happens to be really good at that. So it wasn't like the breakdown of games that had him saying, I'd like to be on that show. It was that some crazy stuff happened on our show, and he wanted to be part of that. And so, you know, and that was from the, you know, from the jump. You know, he'd get on there in that first show and said, push that Christmas tree over on me. We'll get a lot of YouTube hits.
he's but, with the shit too. He's down for fun.
Yeah.
So,
oh, he is, man. Yeah. And we would, and you know, it got to the point after the first couple of months where he was throwing out all these suggestions. You know, you can tase me. I've been to stunt school.
But I could just picture him saying all this shit.
No, and Kenny and Kenny was like, Shaq, take a step back. He said,
pace yourself, big fella.
We're afraid you're going to set fire to yourself, and we're not even halfway through your first year here. Because I think what he had to realize that is a lot of what is funny on our show is really organic.
Yeah, that's
it just happened. Yeah. You know, it's look, Shaq didn't mean to break the internet the night that he told us on the air live that he didn't know that the Warriors played in Oakland.
Oh man, Big Pub was crazy.
Unbelievable.
He did. And I was like, we're doing the highlight live. And I said, we go to Oakland for the highlights. And he's, why do you keep saying Oakland? I said, because that's where they're playing the game, man. He said, is that where they play? And we just kind of like stopped the highlight. And for Charles, I said, how many years did you play in the league?
Yeah, you know Charles from the roasting after that.
Yeah, and he said, you know, I just always thought, you know, we stayed in San Francisco. I just thought we always played there. I just got on the bus. See, you don't plan that.
Right,
and there's nothing in a production meeting that says, okay, look, in that third segment, let's see if Shaq knows where the Warriors play.
Right.
It just happened.
Right.
It just happened. And so he's learned that. There are certain times that he's also, you know, he's had ideas, let's do this because I'd like to, you know, and that's great. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, stuff that people find funny just happens on our show because it's just, you know, it's Kenny turning the wrong way in the chair and somebody beating him to the board. I don't even know how that stuff all started, but now you know.
He's part of the show now.
Now you pick your spots, yeah, and it's like, okay, I got him here. Yeah. If he turns toward Charles, I'm going. But no, that was, I think Shaq, you know, eventually grew into that role, and now he's very comfortable breaking stuff down, whether that's on the others or whether it's Rudy Gobert, whether it's, you know, what's Embiid doing, why is Embiid good tonight, you know, what do you not like? And so, yeah, so now we're just, the four of us, you know, we just do our thing, man.
What is it like for you, though? Obviously, you and Kenny initially started bringing Chuck in, bringing Shaq in, learning everyone in this space now. Like you said, it's a completely new space for them. So learning them and then trying to kind of, as you can, much as you can, kind of control and work people in and out until they have their feet underneath them.
I think all of that comes with reps. And I think, and again, the more you work with somebody, then you kind of know what buttons to push, and you know what's, and it even affects your mind into, as you're preparing for something, and you're preparing for a show, and you see a number or you read a quote, and you think, man, when I throw that quote out tonight, Charles is going to jump on that, if I throw that number out, Shaq's going to, or if I throw that out, Kenny's going to go, whoa, really? I mean, so it's kind of knowing those buttons to push. And so when people call me like the traffic cop on the show, it's like an insult to a really good traffic cop, because really good traffic cops are going to wave this car through and this car through and this traffic's going to stop because we don't want any fender benders. We don't want anybody, you know. But for me, it's like, I know if I wave Shaq into this intersection right now, Chuck is going to broadside him. And so that's, you know, I'm like this rogue traffic cop who would be assigned to desk duty for being so damn bad at his job.
I think that's where
you kind of learn, let's let him go here. And then and again, it's also just trying to get everybody that touches. Mm-hmm. So you don't want the show to be this cookie cutter thing where, okay, you're always going to go to him first, he's going to do this. Sometimes you're going to say, Shaq, I want to hear what you think about this. Hey, we just saw that dust up there late in the half. You know, do you think he did that on purpose? That's kind of my thing, is like make everybody feel like they're always involved equally in this thing, and knowing that if I bring this up, he's gonna just
go crazy.
On this guy. So that's, you know, that's kind of how that whole dynamic works.
How has it been working in someone I'm a huge fan of, and I know once he's done playing, he's gonna be great at? How's it been working Draymond in when he comes on set? Because he's one of the brightest basketball minds I've ever been around.
Yeah, you know what I told him? What I told him the other day, because he's, you know, I mean, he's been on our show, The Arena, you know, talking social issues, and he's been with us a few times. I told him last time, I said, must be good to be you. He said, what? I said, because I don't know how much longer you're gonna play, but as soon as you take those sneaks off for the last time, you got your pick. Mm-hmm. You can go anywhere you want. Mm-hmm. I said, you're that good.
That good.
Yeah, and I did. I mean, and again, I think people need to hear this.
Right.
You know, people need, you know, in this business, I think what goes on a lot of times is somebody may not be doing the greatest possible job they can be doing, but they're not getting any input. You know, it's like you're out there to sink or swim. You know, if you're going to keep making the same mistakes, and maybe people are just too reverential and not going to bring it up and say, hey, you might want to do this and it might make you better. Well, what are you doing telling me? For me, I think it's look, you need to tell people when they're doing great.
Right.
And I think you need to tell them, you know what, how you could really be better is if you did this.
Right.
You know, and that's just my opinion. You know, but what I told Draymond, and he probably already knew it, but I told him, I said, you can write your ticket. You can write your ticket right now.
Well, opinion coming from you in that space, that's more than an opinion. That's the best advice you can get.
But man, I mean, he's good. I mean, he speaks his mind. And for him, he just jumped right into the flow of our show, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like he's sitting in, you know, earlier in the playoffs, each of the guys took a night off. Mm-hmm. So he moved from this chair to this chair to this chair.
Yeah.
And he's great in every chair.
Didn't miss a beat.
No. And has great stuff to say. And again, like Chuck, not holding anything back.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, this is how I feel.
Right. You know? Stand on it.
And when Chuck says, you know, I like the Bucks to win the whole thing. You know, no, I asked Draymond, so who you got coming out of the East? He said, seriously? Yeah. He said, well, Brooklyn. He said, you know, when, and this is when all three are going to play together.
Right.
And Chuck's like, now I got the Bucks coming out. He's, and his just his word was just, good luck, Chuck. You know, so.
Right.
And again, things change because of what goes on with injuries and that kind of thing, right, and who gets eliminated. But to the original point, Draymond Green.
Shoo-in.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Great. Shout out Draymond.
Shout out Dray.
You guys had the unfortunate duty of being live on air with the Kobe tragedy. What was the emotion like and energy like, and how tough was it to be able to get through that particular night?
I've never been in a show like that, I mean, in 31 years. It was the most unique show I've ever ever hosted. And because it was so fresh from, I mean, it happened Sunday, we're in LA Tuesday, and we are in the middle of Staples Center, empty, just to talk about it. Shaq hadn't even talked to anybody about it at that point. Jerry West is on the show. We just had other voices. I think Rick Fox was on that show at some point. And it was just, you know what? It was one of those days where it just told you that this job we're doing sometimes can go above and beyond being just a basketball show, because everybody in the country was kind of coming to grips with, how do you deal with this? How do we deal with these emotions we're feeling? And for Shaq to be sitting there and just pour his heart out. Jerry West do the same thing, Chuck Kenny. I mean, I can't even put into words how impactful that was for us to do it, and just by gauging the reaction of people, that it helped some people Absolutely. Get through it too. Mm-hmm. And that's not to put any self-importance on us, like, oh, look what we, it was good for us all to talk about it, to lock eyes and say, yeah, man, it hurts. Mm-hmm. I hope we never have to do another
one. Still hard to talk about.
Right.
For me, right, you know, just thinking about it right now, man, it's still hard to even talk about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when Jerry was sitting there, you know, talking about what was going through his mind when he decided that he had to have Kobe Bryant, you know, and those first few years of, and how tight they were, you know, the tears start coming, and we're not there to stop them.
Right.
We're just there to kind of put a hand on his shoulder and say, we've got
you, right?
This is what you're doing. And you know who gets a lot of credit, who, and you may not know this story, you know who gets a lot of credit for the way that show came off, is the folks, you know, like our salespeople. Because we're supposed to do like a 4 or 5 segment show, our pregame show leading up to the game that we were going to show that night. And we didn't take a commercial break. Mm. I think maybe we took one. And so, like, our producer, Jeremy, was calling them and saying, I don't think I can.
Can't cut this.
We can't stop this. Mm-hmm. We can't stop this and then go to commercial and come back. And they said, just go.
Wow.
And that was one of those things where it said, I don't care what this does in terms of the sponsors and the bottom line, and we right. value the sponsors and all that stuff, and I know they're supposed to get this, but the recognition that this is special.
We lost a brother,
And we're not going to cut somebody off this because we got to get to commercial. And somebody may be struggling to get the words out, and we don't care if they're going to sit for 30 seconds and gather their mm-hmm. thoughts. That silence was speaking volumes.
Yeah, it's real.
It was, oh man.
It was quiet, yeah. I'm picturing the show in my mind, and I was watching it too, and I was going through a tough time at that time, even just dealing with it, but you're right, it did help a lot of people.
Yeah.
It did help a lot of people.
You have any good, any Kobe stories that come to mind while he was here?
You know, I just, we sat down in his last season over at the team hotel, you know, sat down there for a half hour and just kind of talked, you know, and did that for a piece. I loved talking to him because you knew you weren't going to get the Spalding guide to interview answers from him that would say, okay, yeah, just page 42, paragraph B, that's the answer. Mm-hmm. He thought through everything you asked
him.
He was such a thoughtful and wise, beyond his years, guy that you always enjoyed talking to him. You know, we had him in the studio one night after, you know, after Chuck had called him selfish, you know, during a playoff series. He came into Atlanta, came on the set, part of the crew. And I remember sitting in the green room when we're talking about favorite vacation spots. And he's talking about places. I said, man, I want to take my wife to Italy, you know, and he's like, oh, here's what you got to do. It was that kind of stuff. And it was just his thoughtful way. And it was, you know, I remember when I finished chemo and I was still bald and we're doing opening night, and his was the last voice on a welcome back video that they did for me. And he's sitting here and says, hey, welcome to the Brotherhood. And I was like, man, this is
yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Man, rest in peace to our brother. Throughout the show, we started the show talking about, you know, you kind of piggybacking with your dad and fatherhood. You're a father of six, two biological, four adopted. I find that very interesting because that's what my mom wanted to do, was adopt. But unfortunately, she passed from cancer in 07. So talk to us about just fatherhood, everything you fought through in your personal health life to still be here and be the father you are and your children, for your children.
I mean, Cheryl Ann and I are blessed, you know, and she, you know, you have a boy and a girl, you know, you get married in 82, you got a boy in 84, you get a girl in 87, and it's like, okay, we're set. That's good. Let's not mess with that. You know, that's, you know, then the unscripted part of your life kind of kicks in because my wife is just has this wonderful heart. And
well, we know because you talk about it so highly on the show. We all feel like we know your wife. Man.
I know. Well, I apologize for doing it. But she's like, I come home from work one day and she says, you know what we need to do? And I'm like, chicken or fish, whatever you feel like. I'll eat anything. And she's like, we need to go to Romania and get one of these kids out of an orphanage over there. Because she had seen the ABC News 2020 about these kids just warehoused in this thing. And you know, and they're special needs kids. They're being forgotten. And so we wind up, you know, she goes. I stay here. I'm in Atlanta with our kids who were like, 3 and 7 at the 4 and 7 at the time.
Oh, they were still babies.
Yeah, so I'm taking care of them. She's more worried about them than she is about her trip to Romania. She's like, man, I'm going to come home and those kids are not going to have had a vegetable.
Mother's love.
For 2 months. Yeah, but yeah, so we had a lot of pizza and putt-putt while she's over there. But she goes over there and finds this little boy who's got all these issues and calls me from Romania and says, I don't know what I can, this boy is so much more than we can handle. He's 3 years old, he can't walk, he can't talk. And he says, but I just can't imagine going the rest of my life wondering what happened to this kid. I was like, bring him home. And he was, you know, he had issues, still does. I mean, and then he gets diagnosed with muscular dystrophy and there's no cure for that. And most of the time, a lot of times, kids don't get out of their teens. Guy's 32 now, man. I got this 32-year-old miracle at my house. Mm-hmm. And he's on a ventilator. You know, can't do anything on his own. But he's amazing. And
you guys are amazing.
No, you know what? God's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be adopted a little girl from Paraguay, Carmen, she's 28, adopted two kids out of foster care in Ohio who are now 20 and 21. But we've, you know, it's not because me and Cheryl are great and then we don't do this for any pats on the back. It's just like everybody, there's value in everybody.
Yes.
There, if you will look for it, there's value in everybody and everybody deserves a chance to shine.
Absolutely.
And a chance to be what they can be. And so I think that's what has always been at the root of our heart for adoption, is that let's give somebody a chance, you know, that, you know, let's give this Romanian kid a chance. He was abandoned in a park when he was born.
Wow.
You know, the first time he'd been outside, when my wife took him outside in that orphanage when he was 3 years old, the first time he was outside since he was found in a park. And so I think that we've just tried to teach our kids and that there's value. Look for the value. Don't look for the things that tell you, oh, this, you know, shoot, the nurse who brought Michael out to Cheryl the first time that they met said, don't take this boy, he's no good.
Mm.
And so we, you know, this boy who's no good has impacted so many people just with his life. And
beautiful.
So, no, we got it good, man. And I got 4 grandkids now too, so.
Grandpa Ernie.
We got, oh, Poppy. That's
Papa
what they
Ernie.
Call me, Poppy.
Poppy.
Poppy. And my life is good, mm-hmm. fellas. You know, I get to work with these guys, but my life is great. And that's with the cancer. That's with all the other right. stuff. That's with Michael's situation. I got a great life.
God is good. God is good. Quick hitters. Coming down to the tail end. First thing, actually, before we get to that, I wanted to ask a question. When did you know that inside the NBA was a big deal?
I think sometimes that comes with
just hearing talk,
you know, just hearing people talk, hearing players talk, you know, hearing, you know, whatever it is, you know, people saying, hey, that's, or sometimes, you know, it's the being nominated for. You know, when the Emmys come up and nominations and some wins, and it's like, well, maybe we do have something going on here. But you never get so carried away with it when you're starting that it's like, oh yeah, I'm a big deal. I'm on Inside the NBA. Well, what's Inside the NBA? No, I think just in time, it becoming kind of a part of the fabric of the NBA.
Right.
And you know, and I think that it's very humbling to have the Hall of Fame. You know, create an award, this transformative media award that they give to Inside the NBA, because it's become part of that. But again, it doesn't happen overnight. And I to pinpoint a time where I thought, hey, this show is something. I don't know. Probably a couple of years into Chuck's tenure, he's been there 20 years now. But you know, that's when it started to be like. Man, I can't get away from people talking about Inside
right.
the NBA. Then
yeah.
you kind of feel like, yeah, I guess we're on to something here.
Love it. Love it.
Because we weren't getting that when I was doing the show by myself. Okay? When I was the sole guy out doing there and doing highlights, wasn't nobody saying, man, have you seen that show? It looks like every other highlight show, you know?
But now 30 years later, you're one of the most respected, appreciated voices. On the best show. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you are the focal.
I work with good people, man. That's what it is.
You gotta give yourself some credit. We're not gonna have you on our show and you're not giving yourself some credit, man. We look up to you.
We appreciate
you. I'm even more in awe of the man that you are now after getting the chance to talk to you and know more about you. But besides just watching you on TV. So we're gonna give you your flowers and we appreciate you.
I appreciate you too. But you know, it's like, when you get a platform like that, how are you going to use it? And right. if you're, and I think enough things come up in the course of doing the show for 30 years where you can be you. And that's, you know, whether that's dealing with Craig Sager's situation, whether that's dealing with, you know, the cancer and that kind of thing. There are enough things that come up, whether that's dealing with Kobe, whether it's dealing with the pandemic, that people will see who you really are
mm-hmm.
in times like that,
right.
where they don't see it when you're just saying, hey, there's a three, hey, there's a three, look at that dunk, hey, what do you mean, Shaq, hey, Charles, stop it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are enough things that are real life.
Humanize.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's.
A lot of shows run from that, though. A lot of shows run from what's really going on.
I know.
You know what I mean? And to be one of the top sports shows and to tackle all that says a lot.
I love it.
I do too.
All right, we're going to put you on the hot seat. First thing to come to mind, let us know. Five best single season teams you've personally seen.
Five best single season teams. Does it have to be in any particular order?
No order.
Okay. Uh-uh. You know, 73 win Warriors, 72 win Bulls. I think that that San Antonio team that came back and beat Miami in the finals was
what
one
team?
Of the great. Yeah, you know, after losing it, then they come back
yeah.
and they just throttled them.
Yep.
And it was like a clinic. And I'll go back to those early season or early 70s Hawks teams where I got to watch Pete. Mm. That'll be in there. But that's from a just personal. Yeah, that's
what we're asking.
But the Golden State teams were really fun to watch.
Down one, 10 seconds to go. What are your top five that you ever saw to get a bucket? You've seen a lot of basketball.
I think you put Kobe and Michael in there, and you may want to put Isaiah Thomas in there.
Zeke gonna go get it.
Man, I hate questions like this because I know.
You've seen so much.
Because I know, and I'm going to say, man, how could you not say this? And because that's the way it is these days, too.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime anybody ranks anything and then says, how could you not say this guy?
Right.
But I'll just give you, I'll throw those three out at you at this point.
I like it.
I'll take those three, though, right. Any day.
Top two most memorable events you've covered, sports or non-sports?
That I've covered or that I've been at?
Either. Been a part of.
Okay, so I was sitting there when Hank Aaron hit 715.
Wow.
So that was cool in Atlanta Stadium. So that would be in there. And another one would be watching Jack Nicklaus. I was at the mic when Jack Nicklaus played his final hole at St. Andrews and his final major at the British Open.
This episode and Jim Gray episode, man. I don't know.
No,
man.
Jim Gray will outdo me.
Jim Gray's got so many moments where he was at.
He's there when guys get punched or getting their ear bit and all kind of stuff. But that Jack Nicklaus moment was incredible because that's in the birthplace of golf, and that's like everybody in the town had come out by the end of the day, and.
It's crazy.
But there are a lot of good ones. But I'll say this, working baseball with my dad will be the greatest thing. Nothing will surpass that.
Right, yeah.
Calling games with him, sitting shoulder to shoulder calling games.
Amazing.
With your dad.
How many can say that?
I want a question. This is not on the list, but I wanted to know since you brought
it
up.
If it's not on the list, I'm not going to answer it. I'm sorry.
Hank, what kind of person was Hank Aaron? You got to know him personally.
Kind, gracious, humble, and a gentleman. And again, you know, when you're sitting in the dugout hours before a game and he's coming by and asking you how your little league team's doing, you're like, hold on just a second, is this really happening?
Right.
But I also went to high school with his sons, with Henry and Larry. And everybody just says the same thing, you know, he felt totally comfortable coming to a ball game, sitting in the stands,
really
you know,
cool.
and it was, he was a, you know, one of the all-time greats and didn't do it for the fanfare, didn't do it, you know. My dad, one of my dad's greatest comparisons back when Willie Mays and Hank Aaron were, you know, these two stalwarts and these two foundations of baseball, and people would say, well, you know, Mays is better than Aaron. And my dad would say, Aaron can do everything Mays does, but his hat doesn't fall off.
Right.
You know, so like there was never this showmanship on Henry's part. There was never, you know, he just had these incredibly sharp reflexes and this incredible power in his wrists, you know, where he wasn't hitting 500-foot home runs. He was just hitting home runs that left the ballpark before you knew what was happening.
Mm.
So, and no, he was just to be able to have that relationship and to be able to call him, you know, when my dad retired, I was putting a video together and I said, I need Hank on this video to talk about, you know, playing with my dad. And then having my dad call so many of his games. And Hank just meets me down at Atlanta Stadium. We sit there and do an interview and talk. And he was just
special.
Great, yeah.
Special.
Great man.
All right, back to the quick hitters. Five dinner guests, dead or alive?
5 minute guests that are alive or dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
Dead or alive.
Dinner table with you plus five.
Yeah, well, my dad's there. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite people in the world is in living here in Atlanta is Andrew Young. I'd love to have him be part of that. Pistol Pete would be fun to have there. And I think that probably I would like to. I would like to have the Apostle Paul, and just to hear about that journey and that walk and how that all happened. So how many is that?
Four.
That's four.
One more.
Abe Lincoln.
Nice. Wow.
Nice.
I like that.
All right, last question to finish up.
Five. Yes.
Yeah. Last question to finish up. Who do you want to see on All the Smoke? You have to, and hold up, before you answer, you have to help us get your answer on the show.
Oh, so it has to be somebody that
set
I
up.
Can help you
set
with.
Up.
Oh, let's see.
Does it steer far left sometimes, or actually all the time?
Let's see. Sports figure or anything?
Anybody.
Whoever you feel.
You know who you should have on your show?
Who?
P.J. Morton you should have on your show. P.J. Morton, keys for Maroon 5.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And has won Grammys like the last two or three years.
Yeah.
And is one of the coolest dudes out there.
Dope.
Talk music with him, talk life with him.
We're coming for you, P.J.
Morton. P.J.
Morton,
I'll help you.
There you go. We appreciate that.
Make that happen.
There we go.
I will make
that happen.
Well, thank you. Well, Ernie, again, we want to thank you. Obviously, give you your props. Again, you're someone that's, you know, as players, we don't respect many voices for people who haven't actually done what we've done. And you are at the top of the list as far as players go and respect and appreciating the advice you give and the way you lead and the way you help so many people, man. So we just wanted to make sure we thank you for coming on the show today, but also for everything you do that you might not even realize you being you helps everyone else with. Yeah. So
I appreciate y'all.
We appreciate
very
that.
Much. Man, I appreciate you asking and having me on. And we got it good.
Absolutely.
We got it good. Thank
you. Well, that's a wrap. The great Ernie Johnson.
Careful
catch this.
Throwing that word around.
Excuse me. The legend.
Stop. The legend.
Stop.
Okay.
The legend.
Using any adjective.
The legend.
We use them on our show. We know what you mean to us.
Yes. You can catch us on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform Black Effects. We'll see y'all next week.
This is All the Smoke, a production of the Black Effect and iHeart Radio in partnership with Showtime.